Yes, indeed. It's the Allison Arngrim Show, and I'm Allison Arngrim. Okay, some of you may know me as Evil Nellie Olson, but tonight I'm Allison Arngrim, and it's the Allison Arngrim Show. And here on the Allison Arngrim Show, we talk about things that make us feel good, the movies and the television shows that made us feel good, and the people who made them, and people who are doing things now to make the world a better and more interesting place. And I have a fascinating guest with me tonight. I'm very excited about this. Just found out about this guy. So you've all heard of Valerie Perrine, the actress. She was Lex Luthor's girlfriend in Superman. Yes, she was Honey Bruce. She was brilliant, brilliant, amazing, amazing actress. And some of you may know that a few years ago, she was diagnosed with Parkinson's. And amazingly, a friend of hers has made a documentary and just created this incredible lasting thing just of her whole life. And I have with me tonight, Stacey Souther. Hello, good evening.
Hey, how are you?
I am very good, so thank you. Thank you so much for coming. So this is incredible. I watched the trailer, I watched part of the documentary. It was very powerful. It was almost hard to watch, obviously. How did you meet Valerie? What happened?
Well, I like to say that I guess the heavens opened up and some force brought us together. But in all reality, we met walking dogs because we live in the same neighborhood. And that would have been 2006. And I'll tell you a quick little thing where it won't, because it's actually pretty funny. Bumped into each other, didn't know who she was, bumped into her like a couple of days later, you know, after our dogs had met. We started talking and she's like, "What do you do?" I said, "I'm an actor." I said, "What do you do?" She's, "I'm an actress." I was like, "Oh, well, that's cool." And we chatted and talked about dogs and stuff. And then she said, "I take my dog on this secret hike that nobody knows about. You want to come with me sometime with your dog?" And I said, "Sure." And she gave me her email address. And this was a while back. It was a Hotmail address. And it was her name, right? Chatted a little bit more. And I said, "I'm really bad with names. You're going to have to tell me your name again." And she goes, "Do you know what IMDb is?" And I was like, "Yeah, I'm an actor." And she goes, "Did you ever see the movie Lenny?" And I said, "Well, I mean, I kind of know what it is. I never saw it." And she literally goes, "Did you ever see Superman?" I was like, "Yeah, of course." I was Miss Tessmacher. I was like, "Oh, okay. I know who you are." And the funny thing is, just another little piece of that, maybe a year before, I had a really bad cold, and I keep going. And it was a Sunday. I said, "I'm going to chill out, watch some movies, you know, get to feeling better." Put in Superman. I'd seen it 100 times, whatever. Valerie's on the screen, and I think, "I wonder whatever happened to that lady." And she literally lived half a block away from me. So it was kind of a weird little, serendipitous thing that we met.
That's crazy. Yeah. I, of course, huge fan. I was like, "Oh yeah, Superman, etc." I remember I actually saw Steam Bath. I mentioned this, one of the first people to go nude on television in the television play of Steam Bath, which was fantastic. It was all these people who didn't know they were dead in a steam bath. And it was just like wonderful. She was amazing in that. Valerie is this person, as an actress, she's famous for like two things: that yes, she is brilliant, and that she's stunningly gorgeous. And she played a lot of the super duper sex bomb parts, because and she had the body to back that up with, and the Playboy like twice. Amazing, gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous woman who played the sexy parts, and was quoted as saying that the nudity didn't really bother her in the slightest. She didn't seem to care, but absolutely brilliant, an incredible actress. There were so many women of that era of the late 60s, early 70s, and the 70s were like, okay, they're a sex bomb, they look great, but you know, it didn't last because that was the whole show. But this is just an incredible Academy Award level brilliant actress who also happens to be like hot, and she just had the most amazing combination of everything going. That's why I was always like, "Ah, Valerie." So you meet her walking your dog, and you're like, sort of like, "Oh, who are you again? What?
Yeah, that was it.
And you like bonded and became friends.
Yeah. We just kind of, we bonded, and we became friends, and I'd go over and like hang out with her. And once, I knew she was an actress at this point, and she'd even say, when I was a movie star, and I was kind of like, whatever. And then I got the backstory, and I was like, oh, she was a real movie star, a legit movie
with
star.
A capital M and an S.
Oh yeah, I mean, like you said, like, I mean, separate, but she's the first woman on American television to be topless. She was a trailblazer. I mean, she said whatever was on her mind, did whatever she wanted to do. She there was nobody else like Valerie. I think that's one of the reasons that she just became, so many people liked her and identified with her or just found her, you can't take your eyes off of her. And then, just to be around her, she's a magical person. There's nobody like her. And also, again, when you get into her life story, Vegas showgirl, there's all this crazy stuff, the Japanese stuff. But no, like the acting's one thing, but literally, she's a genius. And I think a lot of people, the sexiness kind of overrode that a little bit. They thought it was all, oh, she's all this and none of this,
Well, and so many of the characters she played early on in Slaughterhouse-Five and Lenny and everything were women who had been strippers or had been porn stars, and people kind of thought of her as if she were an ex-stripper, as if that was like her story. And it's not realizing this highly trained, brilliant actress. And the things that she did on her is amazing.
But one thing, she wasn't trained.
That's what I said. Was she like a Cher, like natural? Like where Cher just blew it up off straight out?
No, she was a showgirl, and she did that for a long time. She kind of became a big deal in Vegas. She got tired of Vegas, and you see some of that stuff that happened in the documentary, the Vegas stuff, and she was like, I'm done with Vegas. Went to like France or somewhere for 6 months to vacation, came back broke. Somebody said, you should go to Hollywood. You're really pretty. You could probably get into commercials. She was out here for literally, I don't know, several months or something. Her friend was having a small dinner party. Valerie's on the phone being snappy and funny and just, being Valerie. There was an agent there, heard her on the phone. He's like, who's that girl? And they're like, oh, that's Valerie. She gets off the phone. He says, Montana Wild Hack, Slaughterhouse-Five. And she's like, what? He's like, are you an actress? And she said, no. He's like, do you want to be? She said, sure. He said, do you have a headshot or something? She said, no, but I have these topless photos of me from Vegas. gave a couple of those to him. He took it to the head of casting at Universal because they were looking for somebody for Slaughterhouse-Five and they couldn't find a girl.
And they wanted someone that knew. They did, yeah. They did, nobody else was fitting them the character at all.
Yeah, well, and the movie, you have to be, the character has to be topless half the movie. So here's the best part. You're going to love this. So they wanted her to come in for an audition.
Now, wait, he's only met her over the phone. I mean, he
got No. He was at the party. Okay. She was on the phone with like a boyfriend. He heard her and saw her and was like, who's that?
But the way she talked, that's what kicked it off. I mean, yes, how she looked, but it was her personality.
Yeah, the whole personality, just being quick-witted, funny, and everything. So they wanted her to come in. It was George Roy Hill. They're like, let's, whatever. She goes in. You're supposed to be wearing a bathing suit because they had to kind of see your body, So either girls were being too shy or they're putting their boobs out or whatever. Valerie didn't have a bathing suit. She'd been in the south of France, it was topless. She had some show gear from Vegas. She went in with something with the boobs cut out. So her, they were really out. And she, she'd been doing this for so long. It's like if you walking around in your socks, like you don't think anything of it. She didn't
think that was her work clothes. What it didn't mean anything. I wear this to work. It's like my uniform.
Exactly. And the thing was, there was a producer, somebody who wanted their girlfriend to get the part. They were giving everyone bad direction, like the worst direction. And George wasn't in the room for this. It was whatever the casting.
I should be more surprised, but I have to say I'm not. I mean, that's really horrible. It's like, give everyone the wrong instructions because I want my girlfriend to be like, oh my God, yes, that totally is a thing. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, what happened was they, what was her name? Monique James, she was the head of casting at Universal. That's who brought Balor in. Later on, they were like, we burned your audition. Like, it was the worst audition we'd ever seen, but you were natural. George loved you. She went on set. She did whatever, you know, she could just do what you told her to do, like whatever it was, cry, whatever. And within a couple of days, they offered her a 7-year contract with Universal. And that's how she became Valerie Prine, the movie star.
Because there was still the last of the contract players at that point, the very last.
Yep, that was the very end of it. Like, literally, she caught the end of that, which was good for her. I mean, you know, they took care of her. But another little side note is, you know, back in those days, they would send out these releases about their new talent and everything. And they said everything, all these great things about Valerie. Again, she'd never had an acting class. They forbid her from going to any kind of class because she was a natural. They didn't want anybody to mess up her natural talent. So she never took a class her whole life. It's all about, with her thing, it was all about her directors. You give her an amazing director, a great script. You tell her what you want. She can do it, you know, like in Lenny, where she's breaking down crying on the phone, which that's the scene that literally got her nominated for an Oscar. You know, I think she thought about her boyfriend that died in a horrific accident or whatever, you know, but she could just like turn it on and turn it off. Like,
it's like the story about Cher when she did Silkwood and everything, and working with Meryl Streep, and Cher asked Meryl Streep, like, oh, great. So where should I study? Whose class should I take? You know, you did all this. What method should I study? And she said, oh my God, please don't do anything. Don't touch it. Don't mess with it. This thing you're doing is what you need to be doing. Don't do anything but that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and you know, as an actress, you know, there's weird ways about if you're going to class and people are telling you stuff. And it's like, you kind of, if you have that natural ability, you just go with it. You don't need to mess with it. Again, it's all about, if you have a great cook in the kitchen, all the ingredients are there. That's all you need.
Incredible. I mean, so the stuff that she did, as I said, I was always just blown away by everything she did, and the fact of her intelligence and her brilliance. And there was a marvelous story that I was going to say. It said steam bath blew me away. And what was the thing that she did that was so fabulously weird?
Was it Can't Stop the Music with the Village People?
I was on the set of that. Can't Stop the Music. Now, they gave her the Razzie Award. Everyone said Can't Stop the Music was the worst thing. That was the one I was like, boo, yes, get. They were shooting that at MGM on a soundstage directly across the alley from Little House in the Prairie. And it was literally happening right there with the Village People and everyone. And we were like, hey, we should go across. Like, they're doing this insane thing with the Village People across the way. It's great. And we'd all met the Village People, met everybody at some point. Everyone met the Village People. It's like, oh, Village People are here. Okay, let's go over. And oh, and it's Valerie. Oh, look. And I went across the street and watched them shooting it. And she was great. It was a really dumb movie, and then it became a cult classic. But no, she didn't do anything wrong in that movie. She was great. It was just the movie was like insanely stupid and like meant to be.
Oh, 100%. What's funny is I just talked to Felipe, Native American, today. He's a friend, and he was going to be in the doc originally. Like, I shot him and everything, and then it just didn't work out when I was cutting it together. But one of his stories is he's talking about Valerie had said something on when they were shooting a scene, like whatever, and it became like a little joke. And all of a sudden, Felipe had these shirts made up with whatever she said, and they were all marching around the state, you know, marching on the lot, like looking for Valerie, going to her trailer. And when he tells that story, he's like, you know, and there's Chips, and there's everybody on Little House in the Prairie. There's little Melissa Gilbert, like, following right with us, and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, when I thought about that, when I knew I was going to talk to you. So it's funny, you're like, oh, and they were shooting that. And it's funny, those two little worlds collided.
Oh, yeah, that was a lunchtime entertainment. You want to go across the road and go see Can't Stop the Music.
Funny.
That was like our thing to do. So you get involved with her, and when did you decide to make the documentary? Was that after she got sick? When did that start?
Well, she was going to do a book for a long time. She
Which
had everything. Oh, it would have been amazing. She had an outline and everything, and I think she would just other things would come up or whatever, and it just wasn't quite ever happening. And I'd said, again, this is years ago, I said, somebody should do a documentary on you. Somebody should do a documentary on you. And it just wasn't happening. And then what happened was she was going to have brain surgery for Parkinson's. And when I knew she was going to have that, I had been thrown into filmmaking, like shooting stuff 6 months earlier because of David Arquette. So I got thrown into this, not her, but thrown in and to shooting, and I learned how to shoot basically. And I had a good eye for it or whatever. So when she was going to have surgery, I knew that that was a once in a lifetime thing. So I literally borrowed a little camera and I took it in the hospital. I didn't ask for permission. I do not recommend that. But I went, I would shoot, I shot all like her in the prep and everything, and nobody was around. And I've just asked her questions. And then, if something happened, I'm just kind of hold the camera down by my side. Like, I mean, who brings a camera into a hospital anyway?
Right? I mean,
Nobody.
it's true. It's like, now the things you can get away with in a hospital are amazing, as I found. But if she wanted it, and technically she's the patient's her room, and if
Yeah.
she said, "Do this," then.
Oh yeah, like that was all good. But I mean, I was doing it like in pre-surgery. I was doing it like
Yeah,
and like
the
it was.
nurses might have had a fit. Yeah.
Yeah, but I got away with it, and I got permission down, way after, so it was all good. But that's kind of what started it, and then.
So you had not been doing documentaries before this. You had been primarily an actor.
Yeah. No, I'd never picked a camera up or anything. It literally is because of David and Christina Arquette that I got thrown into shooting something. It's like, oh, Stacy can shoot it. Like, I don't know anything about a camera. Oh, it's easy. You can use this camera, David's. And I learned a little bit how to use a camera. And I think, again, just from acting and whatnot, I just am aware of things going on. I had kind of an eye for that style of filmmaking, like documentary style. So that's how it kind of started. And actually, what's crazy is when you see the documentary, like you, a lot of the really, well, I think some of the best stuff in the film is where you see like kind of that surgery stuff, and I'm asking her questions and whatnot. That was literally the first stuff I shot, and it just turned out really, really well. And after the surgery, like I stayed with her for 2 weeks because she, she'd had brain surgery, so I needed to be around her. And she had a loft at that point. And I would stay upstairs and. Just keep an eye on her during, during the nights. And there's one spot in the movie where you see me kind of going, she's kind of getting out of bed and she's kind of like, it's kind of like, what's going on? Like she's been asleep or something. And I don't know how or what, how I did it, but at one time I go down and I had the camera with me and you see it in the film where she's kind of getting out. She's kind of like discombobulated. It's like, she's kind of like that. And I'm like, what's going on? What's going? What's happening? She's like, I don't know. I don't remember what you said.
Oh.
Something like that. And it's like, and it's kind of a, it's weird stuff happens after brain surgery. Anyway, it's like that was just a lucky thing that I caught that, But
And now she watched all this footage as you were making this. You were showing her footage as you were going along. It
yes.
wasn't like, surprise, I've made this documentary. It was like,
Oh
she was
no.
basically watching the dailies.
Basically, yeah, it was like that. And like I'd said earlier, I would shoot, I got really lucky with all the people who participated, especially with like a Jeff Bridges or George Hamilton, Angie
You
Dickinson.
got a lot of people in on that. So who are some of the people you got in? I mean, that's huge right there.
Oh yeah, I mean, who else did I get? I got Stacy Keach, I got Lonnie Anderson, David Arquette's in it, the great Richard Donner, who is no longer with us. A couple of people who didn't, I interviewed them, but they didn't, it didn't fit in later on, was Alex Rocco. If you remember Alex from back in the day, he was in The Godfather and everything. I got Dick Van Patten in it. But his stuff wasn't, it was, he, I didn't know if some of these guys were sick at the time. His stuff just didn't, he, I didn't want him not looking his best. He didn't look bad, but he didn't look his best. So I decided to use, footage of them from the 70s, like when he's hosting the Merv Griffin show and
Right,
she's on
right.
that. So I use that because when you think of, it's one of those people, when you think of, Dick Van Patten, you're like, think of, eight is enough, Dick Van Patten, But yeah, I was really lucky getting all those people. But yeah, what I would do, I would shoot whoever, and then I would take the footage to her house where she could see it. And I felt that that was, again, I keep wanting to say physical therapy, but you know, I think it just hearing people that care so much about you, and you know, you've touched their lives, to say such all these great nice things about you, it just cheers somebody up. Even I'm not saying she was depressed or anything like that, but again, everybody likes to hear somebody say nice stuff about him. So I felt that was kind of a plus in her kind of in her therapy of dealing.
Well, it's fascinating because it sounds like on the one hand, any documentary is somewhat invasive. It's often in a good way, but it is coming into someone's home and into someone's life and into their psyche. And here where someone has Parkinson's, and I went through that with my father, so I know how difficult that can be. And to be going into her life, and she's literally going into the hospital with her and filming when she's not well, that could have been seen as, well, this is invasive. But you're saying she was an active participant during all of this. You were saying, here is it. Do you want this footage in? Do you want this person in? I just filmed you while you were ill. Is this okay?
Yeah. Yeah. What happened with that was, because again, there's a spot in the documentary, you kind of see it like a day in her life at that moment. Right. And it shows what a day in her life is, you know, and it's not glamorous and it's not sexy or anything. And this is someone who's known for all those things, being glamorous, sexy, beautiful, like prime of life. When you think of her, like, again, name any movie, prime of life. And to see her struggling and not well, you know, I asked her, I said, so look, you know, this, I want to use this. This is really, you know, it's your story. This is part of your story now. And she said she wanted to do it because if it would help one person seeing her facing her struggles with such bravery, if it would help one person going through whatever, it doesn't have to be Parkinson's, it could be a disease, it could be, you know, anything, mental illness, or you're just having a bad day. Just if it would help somebody get through something they're going through, that's why she wanted to do it. She threw vanity and everything away.
A woman who was known for her physicality, for her physical appearance, for her body, for her physicality, to then be in a documentary where she is shown real and raw in her old age while physically challenged and going through all these medical stuff. That's pretty heavy stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it is 100%. And, you know, here's one of the things. Because I'm so close to her, there's this weird thing you get when you're close to, you know, she's my family, basically, you know? I mean, there's nobody closer to me and nobody closer to her than I am, right?
I mean, you're still seeing her every day at this point.
I see her first thing every morning. I mean, she has caregivers. I'm not saying that she's alone. I see her first thing in the morning, then I see her usually some more during the day, and I see her at night. See her before bedtime and make sure she's good and say my love you, I love yous and all that stuff. Hold on, I lost my train of thought. Where is that going?
When you're that close.
Right. But you know what, she just, you know, it again, it's just tough. That whole thing's tough. Like seeing somebody, I remember what it was. Sorry. So, you know, shooting it, you know, again, all the closest and all that, there's one thing of you being someone you love and, you know, going through this, but then there's that part where you're a filmmaker, there's that little piece where you're like, oh, that's really tough. And then the other part clicks and you're like, oh, that's gold. That's an amazing piece for the film. You know, with certain things where you're like, I know that's really, like, there's a part where a brother, where he gets choked up talking about something. And it's, you know, it's a little sad moment. And then, you know, filming, I'm like, oh, that's sad. But that other part, I'm like, yes, he's breaking
what,
down.
Right, you know, it's this person you know and who you love and you're bonded over dogs. But, and so, yeah, there would have to be moments you go, this is the moment everybody making a documentary wants. This is incredible. This is raw. Right. Oh, wait, it's my friend. Oh, wait, let me stop. Are you okay?
Oh, yeah. Well, no, it's that first in the documentary stuff. Second, you know, but
right, this it would be very weird line you'd be walking.
Yeah, it's weird. Again, like, you know, I shot her again when I walked into the bedroom and she's doing her thing, you know, but literally she gets back in bed and I think cut the camera off. I'm like, okay, let me check out what's going on. Are you okay? Da, 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 da. You know, it's all that, but it's literally those seconds of that, and then afterwards, it's is everything okay or whatever, you know.
Incredible. Now, my father had Parkinson's in his last years, and he did die at 81 from the complications ultimately of Parkinson's. But for his last few years, he did very well. But one of the things he talked about that was so difficult with his Parkinson's diagnosis, and he was in Vancouver in Canada, had like the best doctors and the best drugs and the best everything all set up. And he had the special bed and the special chair and the fancy wheelchair and the whole nine yards with good insurance. But he said it was unpredictable. He said when he first got diagnosed, he said, well, he says, sometimes I feel it's almost similar in a way to almost an AIDS diagnosis. And I said, what? He said, well, they don't really know what causes it. There is no cure. I have to take a lot of pills every day. And it's extremely unpredictable as to how long I will live and what will happen.
Yeah.
I was like, wow. And he said, some days I wake up, I feel pretty good. I just need my cane. I'm good to go. He would go out. He would go out to brunch. He would go out for martinis. And he said, in other days, I need the walker. And then other days, he needed the very elaborate 6-speed electric wheelchair. And he said, and I never know which that's going to be until I get up. He said, some days, he said, I don't know. I'll wake up tomorrow and, oh, I can't get out of bed. And that'll be the day I'm bedridden. I don't know. And yeah. He lived every day with this. And that's what he was doing really well. But he said the unpredictability and the weirdness of the symptoms of Parkinson's was, he said, he did not have the visible shaking. He had a slowness of movement thing and said, I'm shaking inside. And the meds help, he said, but he didn't have so much the tremors people have. It was extremely difficult for him to move. And it was fascinating learning about the difference. Before he actually wound up producing a play for a benefit for the Alzheimer's Association up in Vancouver. Uh-huh. And so he was helping other people as much as he could before he got too sick. But he said, this thing with Parkinson's, he said, it's so unpredictable. Some people start to lose faculties mentally and quickness. He had the thing where he kept his mind, but more and more difficult to speak and move. And he said, some people have the shaking. Some people don't have the shaking. Some people it goes quickly. Some it goes fast. He said, you do not know what weird things are going to do. And then there's multiple things with Lewy body dementia, et cetera. There's now a dozen or more things that cause Parkinson's like symptoms. Yep. That the medical world is just figuring out which thing is which. So my father was up on all of this going, it's fascinating, but yikes. And he was a performer, been a producer and an actor. So he, again, was very gregarious, had a lot of people. He would have loved having somebody come in and said, I want to do a documentary. He'd be like, yeah. He'd have done that. But yeah. That's the thing with Parkinson's. So when was she diagnosed, and did they diagnose her right away? Did they know which thing she had, because it's really hard.
No, it's tough. And I think also, like you mentioned, it's really about having really good neurologists, really good doctors, you know, because if you get somebody that's okay, they're okay. If you get somebody good, like we have somebody great, and you see her in the doc, she's amazing. And like, she's great. But with Valerie stuff, she had essential tremors before that. And, you know, that's the same thing that Katharine Hepburn had.
Right.
And she kind of started out with that. It happened. She didn't even know she had it. She was doing a movie and she was carrying dishes. And after a scene, the sound guy came up and he said, hey, when you walk across, you're kind of rattling the dishes. Can you try to? Well, and then she was like, what? That's weird. And then I think she started noticing when she was putting makeup on. Because, you know, she was all about her makeup. You know, that was a big thing for her.
My dad, it was handwriting after he was diagnosed. And because he had a heart condition, but that was going very well. And he had a stroke, but he recovered. He took his meds. Like, soon as he was having the stroke, he took his meds and his aspirin, went immediately to the hospital. They said, hey, you made it. You got her in time. We fixed you up. You're good. You don't have damage from the stroke. He's like, great. But a few days later, he started noticing he was still having problems. And then a couple weeks later, he goes, still having like motor skill things. That went, oh man, maybe the stroke really took some stuff out. So he goes back to the neurologist, says, now what did the stroke do? Because I really came back fast, like it was okay, but I feel weird. And they ran tests and said, that's not damage from the stroke. You have Parkinson's and it's been sneaking up on you and you didn't notice. And they said, what's your handwriting like? And it was I've never had good handwriting, but what's your handwriting been like the last year compared to? Oh, his handwriting was starting to go. Didn't notice. It was little tiny things were starting to happen that weren't registering.
Yeah. Well, with her, and I know about the handwriting stuff. I mean, and they'll do a test. I mean, sometimes during the doctor's office, they're like, all right, just do a circle, like do like a spiral thing, like some weird things like that, and you'll see that you might not ever really notice unless it's happening to you. But with her, again, it was the essential tremor stuff first. And then what happened later on, well, something went where and there, you don't see it. Like she had a back surgery. I didn't put it in the documentary, and that was a huge issue. Like she didn't bounce back after that. Like she was literally kind of, when I say bedridden, I don't mean like bedridden all the time, but she was in such excruciating pain that she couldn't, like the thing where it's like, oh, she might have a good day and she can get out for a little bit, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, and it's like she's about to cry. So
That's the worst.
that was bad, and then you get the pharmaceuticals in there and all that, and like, but it's a, that anything with your back is tough. But anyway, she got better. Things were going well, she was feeling good and all this stuff. And then what happened was, and I've never told this story, so you're the first. She was doing, I'm not gonna say, but she got a show. She got an episode of a show, and they flew her out to wherever, and she was, again, she hadn't been diagnosed yet, but there was some stuff, like her balance was getting a little funky. And she had been on a flight forever how many hours. She gets off and, usually either you go right to your hotel or, and drop your stuff up. Then they want you to kind of come to set and meet everybody. You know how it is, So she was walking down the hall when she got to the production offices or whatever, and she kind of, balance was off. So I don't know, she kind of scraped up against the wall or it was off. And then somebody saw her or something, and I don't know if she was like, I don't know if they thought maybe I'd been drinking, or she didn't, she was like, something happened, and they sent her home. She's
They
like,
did. They thought she was either too sick or they thought she was high. They didn't know what the heck.
they didn't know. And she, that is one thing. I don't want to say it hurt, it didn't hurt her exactly, but it, because she's one of the hardest working actresses, as in she
Oh,
wouldn't be late for anything, be
I'd
late,
be totally pissed if that happened, if I was having balance issues and got fired day one and they didn't even ask. I would totally be, yeah,
Like
I
literally,
agree.
they sent her home, and but that, I think that just kind of hurt her as a professional as she was, because I don't think they let her explain. I don't remember the whole like
Right,
movie.
I mean, they could have and said, do you have balance issues? What's going on? Are you okay? You could have asked.
So that happened, and I know that was a bit of a blow to her, because again, I mean, she'd never, I mean, come on, it's Valerie Prime. Who would fire her from a show or a movie or anything? That's never
Never.
happened. But that was like one of the first things. But again, this is still before Parkinson's was, they were talking about it yet. It wasn't quite, it hadn't been brought up yet, But that was one of the bigger first things I can think where it affected her, especially affected her in a professional way, because even afterwards, she would hide it. You know what I'm saying? Like, as a doing, where she'd have a prop with her. So she might be doing something, and if she's going to be shaky, she'd pull out a fan, like a hand fan, or she has something for her to hold or something like that. And there were a couple of things she did, and they noticed, and they were like, oh, it's okay, we understand, it's all right. Like, they didn't make a big deal out of it. And then actually the
That's
last,
the thing. A lot of people don't realize. They'll say older people will often that people who are starting to get Alzheimer's, starting to get Parkinson's, starting will have small symptoms and learn to cover them. My father had balance issues, of course, but years before, when he was still relatively young, he fell and hit his head. He had an inner ear injury, He had had a fall and he'd been okay, but they said, wow, you really messed up the bones in your inner ear. And that's like your whole gyroscope and your balance is just not going to be great. And so he had recovered from that. And then, of course, he found out that was actually a beginning symptom of the heart condition. That's the only reason he fell at all, was he was having heart issues. So then, they got him a stent, but they said, wow, yeah, the middle ear bones right in there, phew, totally shot. Yeah. So he had terrible balance and was, taught to how to compensate for that. So when the balance started to go with Parkinson's, how did he know?
Exactly. Yeah.
So the little
That's.
symptoms, so the things, so when did they finally figure out we need to run tests? Something is wrong.
Well, the irony is her brother, who you see in the film, is a neuropsychologist. And in her movie star day, when she was like the top of the 70s, she paid for him to go to medical school. She paid for all of that.
Whoa, wow, whoa. Okay, that's a whole story. This whole thing needs to be. Her brother, who she sent to medical school, became a neuropsychologist.
Yes. And so, I think, and he's in New York and she's here, but some stuff was going on and she went to some specialists here. They couldn't figure it out. She went to New York to some people. They couldn't figure it out. And then somebody, again, they figured out it was kind of essential tremors and Parkinson's. But I would say it was, let's see, when did they figure it out? I want to say maybe like 2013 or so, somewhere around in there was like when they kind of had a, maybe 2014, I don't remember, but that's when they kind of were like, okay, this is what it is. And again, she was still pretty good. I mean, she was still good then, but like I would be with her and like she used to call like her bedroom, it was mission control. She liked to be in bed. She's always had a thing like she likes to do all of her stuff, but she likes bed and TV. And she used to love to read the newspaper. And I remember she'd be sitting there reading it. And I'd be like, how can she read that? Like she's shaking. Like, how does that even, and she doesn't even notice it. She's, I guess, compensated for it and whatever, but it was just so crazy. But yeah, I'd say she was probably, it was around then that the diagnosis came in. And actually the last film she did, because she and I talked about this, because there was another movie and it was something different. But she was having some issues with things and with this other movie. And then it was like, did you tell them about, they can kind of work around some of this stuff. She's like, no, I didn't tell them.
She was working very late into this.
Yeah, I mean, she wasn't working a lot, but she was still trying to work. And I want to add something after I tell this story. But and so anyway, she didn't tell them, and it was a little bit of a, when I say a little bit of a problem, it was like, she was having trouble with something, and it made the day go a little longer, whatever. But the last thing she did, like this amazing director had this movie she had written, and she had all these other older actors. It was all about older actors. It's called Silver Skies.
Silver Sky with 2016, so that's pretty far along.
Rosemary Rodriguez directed. Great, amazing person. I called Valerie and went in. She's like, oh, I'm in a meeting with a director. I'm like, what? Like, who are you talking to? What's going on? And so I go over later and I'm like, did you tell them what's up? Did you? And she said, I told them everything. I told them, like she had a problem because something else had happened. She had a problem all of a sudden remembering dialogue. And as an actress, that's all you have. And she explained, she's like, I have trouble now. And it wasn't Parkinson's, it was from something else. But they're like, oh, don't worry, we can figure it out. They have these little things that you can get now, whatever. And so we'll work with it. And oddly enough, I knew a producer on that once the thing started. I went with Valerie, the first day. I was gonna just kind of be with her and help her out. So they put an earwig in her ear. And my friend was like, all right, so they're going to test it out on you. And my friend was kind of reading some lines to her. And but when Valerie did it, she was giving it like a line reading. It was very like flat or bland or whatever. And I said, no, you need to read it to her like this. 'Cause I'd read with her so much. I knew I did, we just had a little thing. And so they said, well, you're going to be here. Would you want to read with her? And I'm like, sure, I'll do it. And when they edited that movie, the editor had no idea that she had an earwig on the whole movie till somebody told him. Just because I knew what to, you know, we just had a way we did it. It totally looked natural. You know,
you want your ear prompter to be good. You can't have your ear prompter give you monotone. It'll make you nuts.
Exactly. Or you got to know how to like space it out the right way. You got to know where to break that line. So it's not, and then it's natural, you know, when to stop and when to start where it's natural for them. But yeah, that movie, they worked with whatever her issues were. And it was great. And there's actually one scene in that film where she kind of has a breakdown moment. And it shows her like she's drinking or something. And she picks up the glass and that's a day, you know, like you said, that's a day she was really shaky. But it actually worked in the moment because here she is shaken and it looks like, she's shaken from whatever's going on with it. So it worked, you know. So that movie was really nice and it worked. And all right, I'll give you one more thing. I don't think I've told anybody this one. In the middle of filming, she had this episode. Like, we were at home. Actually, it was, right, like I said, my birthday's in 2 days. It was the day after my birthday. And we had a party. I went over the next day, and the maid she had at the time was there. Or I was on my way over, and the maid called me. She's like, something's wrong with her. I go over, and she's acting kind of weird. You know, something's off, you know? So anyway, I had to take her to the hospital. She'd had some sort of episode. And, like, I think later on, it's not the same, but, like, later on we talk about TIAs in the documentary.
Yep, yep.
You know what that is. So
was it, what's a transient, a mini stroke, as they would say.
Yeah, it's like a little mini stroke type thing.
Yeah, the mini strokes, and people do not know they're having them. And that's what it is. Yeah, but they are, and they're cumulative, and it's a problem. It's like a mini stroke. It's a big problem.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, they have no idea it's happened, like you're saying. So anyway, take her to the hospital. They want to keep her. And all she's saying is, it's Monday morning, right? It's Monday. She's like, I have to work on Wednesday. I can't stay. I have to shoot. And they're like, well, let's see. And literally, I'm there at the hospital with her. One of the girls comes over to run lines with her. Anyway, everything's good. They let her out. And she's got, she has her hospital bracelet on.
Still got attacked.
And what's funny is this. The scene she's going to shoot Wednesday, so they let her out on Tuesday. The scene she shoots on Wednesday is, she's in the hospital.
Leave your tag on. It's good.
Leave your stuff on. We'll do the thing. And everybody on the set was just like most people wouldn't come in after the whatever been in the hospital. Like, she was there working her ass off, doing everything. And, you know, again, it worked because it was also like a hospital scene. She was in a hospital bed. But, I mean, you see the scene and it's like, it's a sad scene. And she just, again, you can't stop her. You know, she just brings it every time. But yeah, that was a whole another little side note. Sorry.
Such an actor thing to do. You know, we have the expression, Dr. Footlights. You're like deathly ill right before the play starts. And then you walk on stage and go, oh, I don't have any congestion anymore. My fever seems to have disappeared. It's like the instantaneous thing. And an actor's like, no, you don't understand. I'm shooting Wednesday. And it's and she's obviously the absolute definition of the acting term. Just use it.
Oh, yeah.
I have tremors. Oh, I happen to have my hospital bracelet still on. Yeah, that's brilliant. That is such an actor thing to do.
Well, the show must go on. I mean, and that's instilled from her from Vegas, too. It's like when you were a showgirl, like, you didn't get days off.
No.
Like, if you were sick, she was like, one time I was sick, and she was like, you get up there and do your thing. And then there's a bucket over here. As soon as I was off stage, I would throw up, and then I would. Then I was back on, you know.
But there's no understudies for showgirls. But the thing is, once you go on stage, I mean, I've been in shows where everybody in the show was sick, but it's like, oh, is it curtain? I oddly feel better now. Yeah. And then you go collapse afterwards, but you like miraculously would be fine during the show. This is what people do. Now, how can people help? Because, I mean, she's help other people with Parkinson's. What, and is it Parkinson's? Because they did the brain implant, and did that work or no?
It's called DBS. It's deep brain stimulation, and it did work because the way it works is, let's say you're right-handed, and let's say that's really shaky. They do an implant on the left-hand side because that controls the right-hand side. And that helped a lot because she was getting pretty shaky back then. And when it was on, all of a sudden, again, you see it in the doc. She's like, I asked her, I'm like, how do you feel? She's like, perfect. And then.
Yeah. My father thought about doing it and didn't. I do have a friend though with Parkinson's who got it and said, it's great. I got a thing in my pocket. I give myself a little jolt to be an hour.
Yeah. No, I think it, between having to deal with uncontrollable shaking or having that surgery, I mean, I think the surgery was worth it, and so did she, you know, because literally it changes from you being, you know, like, imagine like eating soup or something, how hard that is, to you can do, you know, tasks that you take for granted every day.
It gives the patient back some control over the movement.
Yeah, it gives them back some control. You know, again, it's life-changing, I think. Because, again, if you're at a certain spot where your Parkinson's is bad enough for you to be thinking about it, it's only going to get worse. So, I think anything that's going to help in, you know, in the least amount is worth it.
Now, this documentary, obviously, as you know, she said, if one person can be helped by people who have these kind of conditions, this... obviously, this is going to draw enormous attention to Parkinson's and the different, you know, tremor-related type brain illnesses. Is there any particular organization that you've worked with or doing anything with this?
No, basically, the one thing that I put out there is there's a GoFundMe for Valerie, and that helps with her healthcare and all those things, because. You know how it is. Everybody thinks if you're a movie star, if you're a celebrity, you're a TV star, that you live in Beverly Hills, you're rich, blah, 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 even though you did that thing 50 years ago or whatever it is, they think you still look the same. You know, it's all that, you know.
And they hear about the Screen Actors Guild insurance and they don't realize how much you have to make to qualify for that. And they assume that. But no, also so many things are expensive. Even people have very good insurance, home health care, all the extra stuff. Like, as I said, I was sort of my father's medical advocate. Getting him and getting insurance to pay for that wheelchair was no simple task. All these extras do add up. And even someone who's made a very good living, it's like, wait, what, my bill is what now?
Yeah, 100%. So,
there is a GoFundMe for. Where do we find that? People who want to help out and chip in, because that's really great.
Yeah, the easiest place to find that and the documentary, it's all in one spot. It's just easy. You go to valeriemovie.com.
That's easy, valeriemovie.com, and they can see the trailer
all the streamers where the movie's available. You can get it on DVD for you cinephiles.
You can order it on DVD right now if you want it. Great. Yeah.
And then the GoFundMe is down there. And again, all that money except whatever they take out GoFundMe, which is a small amount, but all that money goes to her to help with her expenses
some of the money from the DVD, I presume, goes to her.
Yeah. When she gets a cut, we'll put it this way. She and I get the same amount. We get the same cut. So.
You struck a deal. So yes.
Yeah. I was like, you know, a producer who put money in. He's got this chunk. Me and her, we have this chunk. So it all, you know, when it starts making money, then she'll get some of that. But again, it's a short, we'll see what happens with that. But again,
she is getting a cut of the DVDs when there's a cut.
She gets a percentage of anything that comes in. And, but again, the more important thing is the GoFundMe. Because
that's more immediate.
That's immediate. And all that goes to her.
Oh, fantastic. Okay. So valeriemovie.com, and they can read all about you and your work and all about this documentary and see the trailer and get the DVD help Valerie.
Yeah. And help Valerie. I mean, and again, like, here's the thing. I wanted to make a movie that would, it's my love letter to Valerie. It's, you know, I just wanted to do something to honor her and her legacy. And, you know, it is what it is. The plus side of that is if it brings more attention to her and it can help her, you know, like with the GoFundMe, just help financially to help with healthcare. I mean, that's really another reason I really did it. You know, anything, everything I do, I do it to make sure, you know, that she benefits from it. I mean, she's like my main thought is.
And I think it will also educate people to get checked, get tested, check in on the relatives. Like I said, my father had balance issues related to the inner ear thing. So how would he know that he was getting balance issues related to Parkinson's? As he said, his handwriting was never fabulous. So how would he know? So all the little things, little TIAs or a stroke, it's like, oh, it must be that. And so, as they said, no, this has been creeping up on you actually for a while now. It just got to the point where you noticed it. And a lot of older people don't realize with these kind of, and as I said, there's so many different conditions now that they understand better, Lewy body, et cetera, the essential tremors, the Parkinson's, and it's all insanely complicated, but they've made such advances. So hopefully people will start or use this film as a kickoff to learn about this for themselves and their families.
Yeah, 100%. Now I want to add one other thing, which you said something to Sinead, and it reminded me. And this is to anybody out there: if you know anybody that's sick or going through something, especially if it's somebody in there, you know, they're stuck at home, you know, they're bedridden or whatever it is, take a few minutes, go visit that person. If it's 10 minutes, it doesn't matter. You don't really realize how much of an impact it has on that person's day because, you know. You know, when we were speaking about your father earlier, he had a nice, you know, he had a group of friends that were always around, which is
Constantly.
amazing. I mean, that's does so much for a person's morale, and just it just helps keep them sane and happy, and to be able to gives them the strength to and the to go through what they're going through. But you know, again, if anybody knows anybody again that's sick or anything like that, just go visit them. Give them a little bit of time. I think that's some of the best medicine you can give someone.
No, human contact absolutely is the healing thing. As I said, my father, yeah, he had people coming in and out of the apartment 24/7 and at the hospital. And I think absolutely it made an enormous difference in how he was able to deal with his illness. Well, thank you so much for coming on and telling us about this because I did. I was absolutely fascinated by this. Thank you so much for what you're doing. And everyone, that's valeriemovie.com. And thank you for coming on. And I'm Allison Arngrim. This is the Allison Arngrim Show.
Thank you for having me.
From my way home, close to grandma's, ever since departure.